Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here again today for episode number 450. In a few moments, I'll be sharing with you my conversation with Suzanne O'Brien. She's the founder of Doula Givers Institute, and we talk a lot about Suzanne's history involved in the global death doula movement, other countries she's visited, what she's learned from them, how she's been inspired, and how she's planning a Death Doula World Training Day with the goal eventually of training 1 million people around the world to be able to serve as doulas or caregivers for people who are dying. And so we're not talking about professional doulas as much as neighbors, family, friends who can step up and become caregivers when they're needed. So I think you'll enjoy my conversation with Suzanne in just a couple of minutes. Before we get there, I wanted to make a quick announcement that I am hosting a second screening of the documentary film The Last Ecstatic Days. It will take place on April 12th at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and I will leave a link in the show notes for this episode where you can register for it. You do have to purchase a ticket for $10 in order to attend. I will also leave a link to where you can find other screenings on other dates and times in case this one doesn't work for you. There are lots of other virtual screenings being done, so maybe you'll find one that fits your schedule better. But go to eolupodcast.com and look for episode 450, and you'll find the links there to register for my screening on April 12th or to find a different screening. And I hope you're able to do that. I think you'll really enjoy watching this film and be inspired by it. I also want to thank everyone who's been making donations on my page at patreon.com/EOLU and everyone who's been buying me coffee. I really appreciate that as well. This week, I'd like to thank Päivi Valo from Finland, who made a donation through PayPal. Thank you so very much. And it just warms my heart to know that someone from Finland is listening in, and I'm really glad that you appreciate what I'm offering and you're willing to step up and make a contribution. So thank you very much. So we are going to move on now with my conversation with Suzanne O'Brien. I'll be back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm so happy to welcome back to the podcast my friend Suzanne O'Brien. And we've spoken many times. We've worked together. We created a course together. So I always feel close to Suzanne. But actually, it's been a few years, I think, since you were on the podcast, Suzanne.
Yeah, now that I think about it, it actually has been a while.
Yeah, it has. So I'm going to read your bio just for anyone who's not familiar with your work. And then we'll get started with our conversation. But Suzanne is the founder and CEO of Doula Givers Institute. She is a pioneer in the global death doula movement. She was awarded Worldwide Leader in Healthcare by the International Nurses Association for creating Doula Givers Institute and named Humanitarian Ambassador for Oprah Magazine in 2019. All these phenomenal honors for her work to bring peace and comfort to those facing the end of life around the world. She formed Doula Givers Institute in 2012 with a goal to improve end-of-life outcomes for all members of the community through education and advocacy, as well as increasing satisfaction with the home hospice care experience. Suzanne is a registered nurse, and she has worked directly at the bedside of over 1,000 end-of-life patients from all over the world, which is one of the most amazing things about your work, Suzanne. And you can learn more at the website doulagivers.com. So Suzanne, I'm so excited that we have this chance to talk once again.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
I thought we would maybe just start at the very beginning for anyone who hasn't met you before, about how you decided to become a hospice nurse and how that led you eventually into creating Doula Givers Institute.
Sure, I would love to. And I love telling this story because, you know, I really feel like there's a divine orchestration of our lives if we allow it, if we sort of get out of our own way. And that's really what happened with me finding my path to working with those at the end of life. I was a registered nurse, and I still am. And I was in mainstream medical. I was working in the hospital, and I was so disappointed when I got into mainstream medical care at the lack of time that I had with patients, the amount of just things that I saw that didn't feel right. And I also noticed this huge elder population that used to come in to the hospital, be admitted to rooms. Sometimes they'd have their end of life there. I would notice that people would not visit them. Like, it was just so an eye opener. And I remember thinking, I went to school to become a nurse to help, and I'm not able to do that. And I heard this little voice that said, go to hospice. And I have to tell you, at the time I said, why am I hearing that? I have zero end of life experience, none. And I would be leaving a job to take less pay with less benefits and with more hours with no experience. It didn't make any analytical sense. And when I heard go to hospice, what I felt inside was just my heart like expanding. I had never felt this feeling. So I said, you know what? I haven't figured it out by now. I'm taking all the advice. I'm doing all the things. And I just know there's more. I'm just going to follow what this is. I don't know what it is, but I'm just going to follow it and see what it is. And the first day I went out to see hospice patients, I was in the exact place. I knew it. It was like a piece of puzzle. I was in the exact place that I was supposed to be in my life. And it was like breathing air for the first time. It was amazing. And at that moment, I literally said, I'm never going to make another decision other than what do I feel? What do I know I'm supposed to be doing? Not what do I think, but what do I feel? And it's just led me on this unbelievable journey of being able to work with people around the world in this sacred space of end of life and life, because they're not exclusive of one another.
That's such a beautiful story. And you probably know from hearing my story, I too heard a voice that led me to hospice and was the best. Following that intuition was the best thing I ever could have done, completely changed everything for me. And so I think you and I both are big believers in that, in learning how to listen to those little nudges and the little hints of guidance that we get all along.
Absolutely. And then when I was working in hospice, I was so happy there, but I was coming up with end of life, one patient after the next, not going as well as I know it could have. And so it baffled me because I did grow up in a medical family. So I was aware of end of life and illness from a young age, because children are. And I didn't realize that when we got into this space, especially working in hospice care, which is end of life care, that it would still be so dysfunctional. And people would say to me, I'd come in as a hospice nurse and they'd say, don't tell my mom she's dying. And I'd go in to see the mother and the mother would say, don't tell my daughter I'm dying. And for me, I was thinking, okay, so how do we make this better, right? Because people were having end of life, they weren't going well, and families were left with all of this heavy trauma and grief and all of it. And the concept of hospice, which I don't think a lot of people even understand what hospice, which is a beautiful model of care, what they do, but what they also don't do, because we don't talk about end of life. So when they find out that hospice isn't there every day or isn't there all day long, they're in it already and it's a little late. But the real thing that I think is what's moving the needle for the work that we do now is that the hospice model is that the hospice nurse comes in, is supposed to manage, assess the patient, manage the care plan. But I'm, as the hospice nurse, supposed to teach the loved ones how to do the care. And there's a huge gap there because sometimes, again, I was there for 1 hour once a week if my patient was stable. The fear of death, the late time that people come on hospice and families don't know the first thing usually about how to care for somebody at the end of life is not allowing us to have the opportunity to have good end of lives right now. So I knew we had to do something more. I developed a training based on that model that I'm supposed to teach the family. And I remember knocking on the CEO door of hospice. I had never talked to him before, by the way. I'd only seen him in the hallways walking on a Monday. But I knew that we had to do something. And he graciously said, sure, come on in. I told him this idea. I gave him the training. And he said, this is great. We can't do it. I said, why? He goes, we won't get reimbursed for it. So it doesn't fit in the reimbursement insurance structure. And finally, after being frustrated with him saying that, I said, well, how much is it? At the time, it was like $166 a day that somebody, the hospice gets paid a daily per diem for that patient to be on hospice services. And I said, oh, keep your money. I'll just go offer it at the library for free. And I did. I booked the library on a Saturday. And guess what happened? Like there wasn't a seat left. And then I put it online, and then people started joining from all over the world because we're all touched by this in our humanity. And here we are, you know, decades later, but still with that same training that we do every month, and that's our main outreach. Yeah.
I think it is part of our caregiving crisis in our country, though, that every day families are sent home with a loved one, whether they're on hospice or something else, with not the slightest bit of training. How do you give someone medication? How do you take care of them physically? But even more, as you say, how do you have conversations about death and dying? How do you talk about someone's last wishes or finding meaning for their life? No one knows that.
It's terrible. And honestly, now I've counted and I've been privileged to be with over 1,000 families and patients at the end of life. And the handful, and I will say it was a handful, that without any of our added teaching, they really had a beautiful end of life and grounded perception of death. Those were the ones that went well. And I really studied, why did they go well? It's almost as if they lived with the awareness that one day it would happen, that they'd have an end of life. They thought about what they wanted. They thought about what quality of life is. And when it came to there, they had a blueprint. They had a roadmap, not only for them and their families. And those are the ones, no matter what the disease process, they had such a better end of life experience. And I will say this, that 80 to 90% of a positive end of life really starts way back here now, with not only our choices in a practical sense of advanced directives and what quality of life is to me, but also making sure that I'm making the most out of this gifted journey that we've been allowed to have every single day. Mm-hmm. Because then when it does come, hopefully we can say, okay, you know, you lived fully, you don't have a bunch of regrets.
And I love that. I love that concept of having a roadmap for the care, because caring for a loved one at the end of life is such a powerful and profound experience. And yet how many families don't get to that point because they're traumatized by being asked to do things that they don't understand and they don't know how to care for. But with the roadmap, they're able to show up fully and really make the most of the experience.
Yeah, it really gives them a container because they are so in shock and overwhelmed. And I have to tell you that I've had multiple times where I've come into a household and they thought their loved one was just sleeping for a long time. And they were like actively dying, that any minute that person could die. I've had people that have been already deceased and the family was so checked out in shock with this whole thing that they didn't realize that person was dead. So this is not a way that we should ever have end of life. And it also is something that, again, will leave. How that end of life goes is something that family holds in their heart for absolutely ever. Mm-hmm. So if it's 100% guaranteed and we know things that can have it go well, why aren't we doing everything we possibly can to share that information, support each other in that sacred part of the journey?
Yes, yes. And Suzanne, for as long as I've known you, which I actually think it's almost 12 years. I mean, wow. Or maybe 10 or 11 years. I met you a long time ago. As long as I've known you, you've been offering the free training that you described, which is level one doula givers training that you offer to anyone for free. And I just want to emphasize that and tell people you've been doing that for all these years and training so many people. And it seems like for the most part, these are family caregivers, neighbors, community members who just want to know more about how to care for someone at the end of life.
It is. And it's one of my greatest joys, I have to say, meeting in that global community, because this training is a complete and it's live. And people are like, well, you should do a replay of it. And I said, you know, they're showing up. I want to show up. And I'm going to stay on and answer all their questions as well. And we've had people, you know, we had a beautiful woman from Uganda who said she snuck out of bed at 2 a.m. so she could learn this to help her village. We've had people from Ukraine. We have people from all over the world. Why? Because we're all going to have end of life. We're all touched by this inhumanity, but also that Western medicine and the removal of death and its sacredness has really reached everywhere almost in the world. So we're seeing the same aging population and problems. We're also seeing the same medical advances that are knowing how to keep people alive, but keeping people alive and living are two very different things. And at the same time, we've removed all the teachings that, again, caring for someone who's dying was a skill that 100 years ago, a grandmother used to hand down to a grandchild. We've completely lost it, but we still expect families to care for their loved one at the end of life when they don't know the first thing about how to do that. So let's give them a roadmap. Let's give them training and help reduce the fear of death, but also inspire us about life, because the training really does bring you into that space.
Yes, that's so beautiful. And I know, well, a couple things I wanted to ask you about. I know that you have Death Doula World Training Day, and it's coming up very soon. And I wanted you to talk a little bit more about what that is.
Thank you. Yeah. So that is, again, once a year we do World Training Day, Death Doula World Training Day. We really want to raise awareness of this movement, the Death Doula movement, and also that there's free training available. And so this is going to be on April 18th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And we also want to always highlight an organization or a cause on that World Training Day that we can help donate and support to. And so this again is going to be on April 18th, and we invite people to share and come from all over the world. This is for family caregivers, for hospice workers, for death doulas, for everyone. This is applicable for everyone, this training. And then in November, I was able to go to Guatemala and be part of the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Guatemala, the International Thanatology Conference, speak there. When I was there, first of all, the people of that country, they're just so loving, which I think every experience that I've had, I've just met the most beautiful people. But for Guatemala, what's happening right now is that people are going to Guatemala City. So they're going from the outside countryside and the villages, and they're coming into the city to get end-of-life care for loved ones. And because they don't have money or funds, they're sleeping in the street. And a lot of times, because the crime rate is very high, that they're having issues with being robbed and things of that nature. So Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Guatemala, they put together these respite houses that they're building from the ground up, literally, that have cots in them that are going to be a safe haven for people to come in and stay for free. And of course, when I saw this and the passion behind what they're doing and the beautiful people, I said, what do we need to finish this respite house? And they told me, and I said, we're going to do that. So for World Training Day, we are now highlighting this great organization that you can see what they're doing, but we're also going to be taking proceeds and funding the finish of the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Respite House in Guatemala. And we're going to all do that together.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's fabulous. So what will World Training Day consist of if people sign up for it?
So it's going to be the 90-minute death doula training. So you're going to get that. So we're going to start out with a bit more about the world connection that we all have. We're going to talk about the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Guatemala Respite House as well. And then we're going to give you that full training. So again, if you haven't taken it already, come to this and meet in global community. This is how we shift the world. And it's very interesting because I think about this all the time. Our world, as we know, is going through a lot of growing pains. That's putting it mildly. And it's really through learning about death and bringing the awareness back of end of life that we are going to change life for all of us. Because, you know, we're all kind of pointing fingers and doing these different things. And the equalizer in humanity is that no matter who we are, how much money, what you look like, what degrees, all of us are so much more similar than different. And all of us will be touched by this. We all are touched by life as well. And it's time to bring back that compassion and presence and non-judgment with each other, which we learn at the end of life. That's how we're going to heal the world as well. So is it ironic that we're doing it through end of life, this whole thing? sometimes I say yes, but then I say, of course not, because it's all part of the whole. So we invite everyone to come, but then you're going to walk away having those empowered tools, not only to care for someone at the end of life, but, and this surprised me, Karen, how many people wrote in who took that 90-minute training and said it healed their grief. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about grief of parents 30 years ago, 40 years ago, a mother who had their child have their end of life. And that really surprised me, but I was so grateful for that. So I think, again, it brings back the natural sacredness of the journey. And we also will share what end-of-life patients say, which I think is completely healing, because they're not trying to sell you anything. It's like through the mouths of babes. It changes our relationship with death. And for something that's 100% guaranteed, we're not going to change that we're all going to have an end of life, but we can change the perception and the energetic attachment we have to it. And so bringing it back here in World Training Day is bringing us all together in that sacred space.
And that's one of the things I appreciate so much about you, is that you do have a global perspective, because you've traveled and you have seen other countries and cultures. And sometimes we may wonder, we're sitting here in our own little community looking at the issues we have, and may not be so aware that, as you said, these are issues everywhere for all humans. It's part of our humanity to struggle with death and dying, and to figure out how to be with our loved ones who are at the end of life.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, when it was in 2012, I did a volunteer hospice mission to Zimbabwe, Africa. And it was really on that trip, working with people. I think the average age of a woman there was 47. There were 7-year-old children taking care of dying parents. And of course, they didn't have the medical, all of the things that we have in medicine, but also medicines themselves there. But what they were doing was taking a neighbor and training them to sit with the neighbor that was dying and their family and hold that space like a doula. And I saw the effectiveness of really just the energetic holding the space, but knowing the physiology of end of life, so that she could share what was happening, make suggestions, and just knowing that that was a natural part of the end of life process, not to be afraid, but for the duration, like a birthing doula, but for the other end of life. And I thought, of course, that's it. That, you know, presence is our most powerful medicine we have to give. And we're not doing that. We're running this way and that way. Let's bring back that awareness. And then, of course, we are privileged to have medicines and things that we can have to control symptoms. But crediting this beautiful community of Zimbabwe with teaching me one of the most valuable lessons about how to give end-of-life care, and bringing it back and really developing out that concept of that doula at the end of life.
It's such a beautiful story when you talked before about the synchronicities and how things come together, that unbeknownst to you, this trip to Zimbabwe would be such an inspiration for the work you're doing now. And you're coming full circle because of your global presence and helping to train people all around the world, but Death Doula World Training Day and other ways that you've reached out to other people. So you're really paying it forward in a way from that original inspiration you got.
Yeah. I mean, well, thank you for that. It's just really, it's an honor to be in this space. And that's the other thing that we should say here, that any organization or community group or anyone around the world, if you are in need of training and support to build out your own programs, please let us know. We will help you do that, because that's what we're here for. Yeah.
Wow. That's really wonderful. So that's exciting. That's April 18th. So I'll put a link so that people can sign up for it, for the Death Doula World Training Day. And then this is also part of the Good Death Campaign, which is kind of your overall campaign. And so tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been doing this for a very long time, and I always want to say, how can we change the perception? How can we bring death back into we're just reminding people again, I think we forgot that death is not a medical experience. It's a human one, and it's a holistic human one. And we're all going to be touched by it. So the things that we can do to learn how to live, and I know that I'm not alone in this. When I became a hospice nurse, when I started working with people who were dying, my life completely changed in the best way possible. I felt a connection. I felt something greater than being a part of something greater than me. I learned about that there's so much more going on than a lot of us know. I learned about slowing down and savoring each moment, not sweating the small stuff. So instead of, oh, I have to go to the grocery store, I get to go to the grocery store, or I have to go to exercise. It changed the lens in which I look at the world. And that's, I said, how can we change the lens of looking at end of life? And I have had so many miraculous, beautiful end of life experiences that I've had with my patients. And I said, if people could see that, if they knew end of life could be like that, they would never be afraid of it. So I'm going to tell them. So I'm going to share with them. So I said, okay, so how do we bring us together saying we can change the culture of end of life? Because it's the number one fear in the world, by the way, number one fear in the world. Together, how can we do that together? So let's offer free training, but also let's say the good death. How can we have a good death and give tools and give conversation and remind us that we're in this beautiful thing called life together? So we have a good death campaign. And that again, consists of lots of different education and outreach and really saying we're in this beautiful thing together. Let's take a breath and let's go to the heart and let's say, how can we meet in presence? Because I think we all know the other way isn't working. And so we have a goal now. It was interesting because when I looked back, and yes, I've been doing this for over two decades, that level one training, when I started to look at all the webinars, I do it monthly, how many people have taken that? I said, wow. Okay, so we're about 300,000 people from around the world. And I thought, let's make a goal. Let's put a goal on this to get 1 million people trained, 1 million family caregivers with the free training from around the world. And let's do this together. Let's raise the awareness so that they can have the good death has a ripple effect. So think about everyone involved in that family unit that's attached to that person. There's going to be, you know, children and aunts and uncles and friends and all of that. If it goes well, and it can, they will have a very different relationship with end of life and life from that. And we only have one opportunity to have that end of life go well. We can't go back and do it again. So let's change the narrative. Let's change the perspective, and let's let people know that there's lots of free education and groups supporting the good death, which is really the good life as well.
Mm. I absolutely love that. And I really love that you had the courage to set a goal of 1 million people trained. And I think there's something so powerful when we create an intention like that and actually put a stake in the ground and say, this is what I'm working toward. I want 1 million people to be trained, because sometimes, I mean, it helps us have a real focus and like gathers our energy together toward that goal. And I think that's so powerful.
I agree. And I'm saying, you know, if I looked back and I said, we have these beautiful numbers and people that are all coming together, we can get to 1 million. We can do it together. And that's how you make change. So I know we can do it. Maybe we can put the goal for like 2030. I think we can do it earlier, but that's still a good, that is still a good time for it. But, you know, I know it's attainable, and it is a thing that we're all going to do together. So maybe we'll put in that in our intention right now that we are going to hit that goal by 2030, maybe earlier. But if you think about it, there are billions of people, 7 billion people in the world. Every single one of us is going to have an end of life with ourselves and our families. So, and this is free. So let's share it and let's change the world.
And I love what you said about the ripple effect, because I think I read somewhere, you know, every death affects at least 30 people in the immediate circle around that person. And if you're creating the good death and helping people have a positive experience, for if 1 million people trained means 30 million people who are having this more positive experience around end of life.
I really love that. And just to add to that, the children. So the next generation, because what I have seen with a lot of people today with the very dysfunctional relationship with death that we have and the fear that's there, is they tell me that when they were a child, they weren't allowed to see somebody at the end of life. And I've had multiple people whose parents have died when they were younger, not even knowing their parent was ill. So this set them up. And I know that everyone meant to do the right thing, but what it did was it did the opposite. It created this fear around, because children will take their cues from us. one of the best things we can do for our children, who, by the way, are the little masters and so wise, right? Is allow them age appropriately to understand that death is a natural part of the life cycle. Their pets will die. You know, grandparents will die. The earlier we do that in the healthiest way, the better set up they are for many things in life. And so that's the shift, I think, that we're going to see in that next generation coming about, and hopefully for generations to come. So that is a gift that keeps giving.
Yes, absolutely. And that part of the training is learning to have the confidence to be able to talk to children or other anyone of any age about death and dying. And that's what we need everywhere in our society.
We do. And I think, again, you know, I don't have all the answers. We don't have all the answers, and that's okay. But to be honest, and then to go find resources, you know, to pretend it's something different, to pretend it should be avoided or feared, is not the way to go. There was I think it was 2016. There was a church who actually asked me to come in and talk to the children of the church about death. And so there I was, and everyone was there, and the children were in the front row. And I told them I was a nurse, and I told them I work with people who are dying. And there's a picture after, these children are smiling, and just so, they were like, my hamster died. You know, it was really beautiful. So I think that, again, we have to take a step back and get grounded and realize that death is a natural, sacred part of the journey. And how can we show up now to shift the culture to make it go as positive as possible? And it can go really well.
Yes. Yes. That's so beautiful. And one thing I've kind of envied is that you had a chance to go to Thailand and work with some Buddhist monks. And I was really curious about that experience. That's a place I would love to visit one day. And I just wanted to hear what that was like for you.
So, So once again, I really want to stress, and I think this is like what I call like a doula giver's pearl, or something that I really hope that people hear and take in, is that following your heart guidance and following, because there's going to be moments in our lives that are presented to us that when we say yes to them, they change the trajectory of our entire journey. But I also want to tell you that those moments usually require, maybe I should say not usually, will probably always require you to step out into faith, to follow what is being, what I call inspiration, inspired guidance. And Thailand was one of them. So I had a woman who took the level one training. She wrote me a beautiful email after it of how much she learned. And she told me about all the volunteer work she was doing in Thailand. And again, just an inspiration. I said, I'd like to give you the full certification for free because you're doing such great services. And she couldn't believe that. She took it and she just emailed me what she had learned. It changed her life. We jumped on a Zoom one day, and here I am, because sometimes words come out before I even like process them. And that's an okay thing, because I learned to just trust in all of it. And I said, if you ever want me to come to Thailand and do some free trainings, I'd be happy to do that. She said, really? And the next thing you knew, that we had talked, and we decided March 2019 that I would go, and she was setting up some trainings. Now, I had never met her in person, by the way. And all of a sudden, you know, I have a month long trip that I have booked in Thailand. And I'm so glad that I didn't know how many trainings she was adding, because I would have said, there's no way I can do them. 14 trainings all over the country of Thailand, March 19th. It was one of the best experiences of my entire life. So I also want people to know that I feel that most of the beautiful experiences you will have in your life come from a place of just being of service, of just giving without really any, I mean, just giving, just, you know, saying, I'm going to show up and do that. And so, yes, there was the Buddhist monks were incredible. So they are monks that do end of life care over there. And it was over 100 people in this hospital. It was very, very intense. I did not realize that over there, you know, Buddhist monks are really revered as like gods over there. And so they kind of were in their own section. And for 2 days, we did the full doula givers training. And what they said they learned, what they shared with me about the heart, and just, it doesn't matter who we are, what labels we carry, we're in this together, and we can all learn all of us the tools of how to care for people. And now they're using it in their hospital. They are taking care of people. And I can't wait to go back and to actually see the doula givers training and what they're doing with it now. So it is such a small world that we are in. But yes, one of the greatest experiences that I've ever had. And I encourage everyone to travel, to just go meet people, and to definitely go to Thailand if you can.
I love your pearls of wisdom. First of all, like listening to the intuition that you get and not being afraid to step up even when it doesn't seem fully rational, even when your rational mind is saying, yeah, I don't know if this makes sense. I don't know if this is the right thing, but following it anyway, and then being willing to be of service. And so you may not have a clue, how will this benefit me, or what will I take away from it, but focusing more on what will I bring and what can I give to other people?
I think that's the magic of life. I honestly do. I think that, again, you're going to be given opportunities that come in. And if you let your heart lead the way and just say yes, and do not think about the outcome or attachment or what, don't do that. Just say, oh, I am right here. I'm meeting right here. I think that's where all of the magic in this life happens, and just it starts to unfold. If you would have told me from the day that I was a hospice nurse that I'd ever be anything different, I really probably wouldn't have believed you, because I knew that I was supposed to be there, but I kept hearing, teach, you have to do more. And I knew from that feeling of that very first yes to follow my heart to hospice that my hands are off the wheel. I will just keep saying yes to what's presented. If it feels really aligned with my heart, then it's a yes for me. Yeah. Mm.
Yes. I love that so much. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to mention that while the training we've been talking about is the free, like level one training, you do offer additional trainings for someone who wants to go on and become a fully trained doula to work with others.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if you are called to this space, there is such a need for this now, because we have, I mean, just in the United States alone, we have 76 million people over the age of 65. At the same time, we have a fragmented healthcare system. And we also know that when there's a huge need at once, what we saw with COVID, it breaks. So the good news, again, is bringing the awareness first and foremost that death is not a medical experience. It's not to be fixed. It's to be supported and guided. So now you have an aging population. You have people that need planning ahead help. You have people that need help at the end of life, creating that sacred space and guiding families, just like that birthing doula. So for the duration of the journey. So yes, if people are called to this space that want to be professional doula givers, death doulas, we do have that available as well.
And I love that there are so many different levels at which a doula could interact with people, depending on what you feel called to do or inspired to do. And I know I read something about the idea of tele-doulas, which I think that's really important in our world, that we have doulas who are comfortable meeting with people like this over Zoom and being able to talk with people too.
I was doing tele-doula before COVID. And it's because a few things. Number one is that we don't have doulas everywhere. But number two, families don't always want another physical person there. So a lot of the times you're working with that main caregiver, and it can be highly effective to do that through technology and ways to, you know, give them guidance, which is not interrupting the rest of the dynamic. Again, we're kind of rushing in at the end right now for the most part. And there's a lot of emotion for everybody. And so sometimes, you know, there's just another person added, too much going on. You can guide people so effectively with tele-doula and technology. And that is such an exciting thing. And so, yeah, there's the sky's the limit for the support that we can give one another in this world and all over the world.
And especially given our statistics here in the U.S. of rural areas of the country that have no hospice, they have right. No one trained in end-of-life care. And to think to be able to bring someone in using technology, I mean, that could change everything for those small little communities.
It does change everything, you know, so let's utilize it. And that's the exciting thing. You know, sometimes we get, okay, technology, and, you know, we've gotten so far away from being together, although there are huge benefits, obviously, to technology. So let's use it for things like this that can make a huge difference in the world.
Yeah, definitely. And one idea that I heard someone mention is the idea of dementia doulas that are trained to be with people with dementia and their families, and then also doulas who are trained and who maybe specialize in medical aid in dying for those patients and families who want to pursue that.
You know, so I phrase it like death is having a rebirth. And with that, there's so many new things coming about. And I think it's really wonderful that doulas, doula givers are staying at the forefront of what those things are. Because just like you said, we have a huge population with dementia. And that is something that families deal with for, you know, 10 years, maybe even longer, even before they become end of life. That's intense. You've got medical aid in dying. There's a whole movement going on with that. We could do a whole podcast on that, but yes, there are some doulas with states that where it's legal that are able to be that support system. Now, I want to just preface that and say that I want our doulas to have all the education that I educate in our doula givers to make sure that they can then give that information to families and patients so the family and patient can make the most informed, subjective decision for themselves. Because if you study medical aid in dying, and I'm not saying yes or no, or it's right or wrong, because this is a personal decision, but when people have said why they chose that, and I understand they don't want to be in pain, they don't want to lose control, those things are very, very important to understand, but to also address for all people. So maybe they don't have to take that if there's other ways that they can be ensured that their pain would be controlled. So I think it just has a discussion around it. But yes, there's doulas that are specializing. And also VSED is a big one, I think, coming about. Mm-hmm. A big option that doulas are being asked to help families and patients have that VSED, which, by the way, is voluntarily stop eating or drinking. If you have an end-of-life process and you choose to stop eating, it follows that. It very much mimics and follows the natural way that the end of life would occur. And the doulas are helping to set that up and work in tandem with hospice as well. There's lots of beautiful things happening out here.
Yeah. So there's so many different opportunities for people who want to work as doulas.
Yes.
And I always go back to the caveat that we still need so much more education in our general public to make sure we have people who even know what doulas are, or to open their minds to want to work with a doula too. So at the same time, as we're training a lot of doulas, we need to continually be working on general education for our public around end of life issues.
Yes. So yes. I think education, I mean, again, I think what we've talked about here is it started as a free library event over 2 decades ago, and it's still that today is that free event. And I think education is the key to everything. Having community conversation, creating safe spaces for us to explore this topic that is the number one fear in the world. So we really suggest to our graduates to go host death cafes in their local or a life cafe if their library doesn't want to do a death cafe, although it's a beautiful thing, is to host those monthly events where you invite community to just come in and have conversation, get their questions answered. And then it really does have a ripple effect from there. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I think that's so very mm-hmm. important. Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you want to share with us? I love hearing some of the stories that you have to tell about patients you've worked with, and also any of the lessons you personally have learned from working with the dying.
Yeah, I've learned so very much. So a few of them, and again, doula giver pearls, I kind of like to say that because I think that these are like these universal lessons that can change your life if you are ready to receive it and if you learn to live in that way. And so one is that we have our heart guidance, our higher mind, our soul self, if you would call it that. And then we have the human part of us, right? And most of us aren't aware that there's really that too. And I think that when we learn to quiet the chatter of the human ego mind, which is busy and frenetic and stressful, and listen to that quiet, still voice that we have, what is it saying? And then what I call that inspired guidance, you know, that it's going to give you. And then it's us, up to us. We have free will in this journey, is to take inspired action. And I think that that's where most people shut down, is that you may get an inspired guidance that says, you know, do this, or why don't you go do that? And then the mind just comes and shuts it all down and you stay stuck. And many people will say, you know, well, do you want to risk everything and change careers and do something? I will tell you that it's risking you not stepping out of your comfort zone, not necessarily just in a career, in your life. Where the magic happens is outside, where you can't see where it's going, but you're flowing and you're feeling and you're following your heart. That is where the magic happens. The number one regret of the dying, it's not the fear. So I want to give you a personal take on this. They say death is the number one fear, and I do understand that. For the people that I've been with at the end of life, it wasn't so much the fear of death. It was that their time was up now and they didn't live. They knew they were here to live a life and they didn't do it. They thought, I have more time, I'll get to that. And now it was over. So that is what I don't want all of us to fall into, that space. I want you to take the trips. I want you to write the book. I want you to go outside and just marvel at nature. Just sit with it every day, because there's joy in every single day in the moments. And this is what end of life patients will teach us. So it has changed my life completely. And I think this is why I feel like this training, the level one, is just such a successful one, is because it not only teaches you the empowerment to care for somebody at the end of life, it is infused with bedside stories from those at the end of life, again, that will change your perception. And it's just telling you what they're saying, but it also shows you the heart and the mind guidance. And that, you know, this is what I personally believe, is that we go on and on and on because of what I've seen, because of the things that I've experienced myself and what patients have shared with me. And if we knew that, wouldn't that change the way, again, that we look at end of life and the way that we look at life? So there's so much more going on here. And I just invite everyone to take a free training. It's 90 minutes. Step into the space. And I promise you, if you give 90 minutes of your time, it'll be life-changing. It could change your life.
Mm. So true. And we're encouraging people to sign up for Death Doula World Training Day on April 18th. It's at 7 p.m. Eastern. But for anyone who can't make that training, there are other trainings, right? They can go to the Doula Givers website and learn about it.
Yeah. So there's a whole free resource center that we've now put together. So you can go to doulagivers.com. And in that resource center, you have, you know, an advanced directive document we've put together. You have, you know, how to care for the caregiver, self-care. There's a lot of resources in that for free, all for free. So I encourage everyone to go check that out and to take whatever resonates with them.
That's perfect. And I'll leave a link. There'll be a link for the website in general, but also specifically for World Training Day for anyone who wants to sign up and join us. I wanted to tell you, April 18th, that's my father's birthday. And you and I kind of connected because you know the story of my father, but that's his birthday. And I feel really thrilled that your World Training Day is on his birthday. That's very special to me.
There's no accidents, Karen.
No.
How beautiful. Because your dad and your story, like, has had a big influence on me as well. You know, I don't want to go again too far down, but it had a big influence on me helping more with veterans and knowing what we go through. And then you saw the birthing of, you know, Quinn and what she's doing, and how, you know, just we blossom when we come together. And your dad is a big part of that, his beautiful story. So thank you for that. And I'm so happy to have this on his birthday.
Yeah. And how interesting. Yeah. It honors my dad in a way. And so
absolutely.
I'll be thinking of my dad on that day as the World Training Day is taking place.
Yeah. I think we're going to do a special little something for that for him as well on it. So.
Oh, how sweet. Yeah. Oh, Suzanne, it's just such a joy and a pleasure to talk with you. I really loved everything that we've worked on together. We've had some great experiences, and hopefully there will be more for the future too.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure. You are doing such great work in the world, and every time that we can come together is, to me, just priceless. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you once again for all you're doing. And I'll see you April 18th
Okay.
for World Training Day. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Suzanne O'Brien. I love hearing her story about her trip to Zimbabwe many years ago that inspired her as she saw neighbors taking care of neighbors at the end of life. And these were people in villages who had very little in terms of supplies and medications, but they offered their caring hands and their love to one another and helped support each other at the end of life. And it's such a beautiful image. And I love Suzanne's goal of training everyday people, not necessarily people looking for a new career in life, but making sure everyone has enough tools and resources and skills to be able to step up when a neighbor or a family member or a friend needs their help at the end of life. So if you're interested, I hope you'll take in her 90-minute free training and recommend that to other people who might be interested in it. It's a great place to start anyway, even if you're wondering, is this work you could possibly do or that you might be interested? You have nothing to lose by just signing up for that free training, learning a little bit more and see what you think. And I also love Suzanne's advice to follow your heart and really listen to your intuition and let it guide you. And it's really powerful advice. Obviously, it's made a big difference in her life, and that's something I aspire to do as well. So I'll remind you, if you like content like this, be sure and share it with other people. Let them know about the podcast and show them where they can listen and subscribe. And also make sure you've subscribed and left a rating and review for the podcast. That's really helpful when people are searching for this kind of content. If you'd like to learn more about how you could make a donation to support the podcast and the YouTube channel, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support, and there you'll find three different ways you can make a donation and keep this podcast going a little bit longer. And don't forget the YouTube channel. If you like watching videos, you can go there. It's also called EOL University on YouTube. You can go there and watch the videos of me and my guests as we chat with each other. So I'll be back next week with another new interview for you. I'll be speaking with Dr. Keshana Gidry, who is a hospice a doctor, a healthcare advocate, and an educator in the community, encouraging people to learn more about the end of life. So you'll really enjoy that conversation. She's so much fun to talk to. So until then, remember, we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.